if I brought up five non-owned BCBA-owned ABA companies and had five clinician-owned ABA companies, which one would be more ethical? I don't know that I could pick that. I don't know that I could say, oh, well, this one's definitely going to be more ethical than the other. This one's definitely going to be more sustainable than the other. Because part of owning an ethical ABA company, it has to be profitable. Because if you are losing money on every case that you accept, you won't be in business very long. That means your staff aren't going to get paid. That means your clients will no longer get services. So I don't know how you could just focus on quality and not focus also on profit. Hi, my name's Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3Pi² ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3Pi² has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders Podcast, brought to you by 3Pi². Well, with us today, we have our good friend Jennifer Helton. She's not a stranger to you if you've heard our podcast any, because she's been on quite a few times.
Yes,
she's one of our favorite guests.
Reminiscing when this all started, and it was in November of 2021.
Wow.
So it's like
forever ago.
It's all, what, 3.5 years? Am I doing the math right?
I don't know. It's 2025 right now.
I don't know.
4.5 years? I don't know. Anyways, it's been a long time. So, welcome, Jennifer. We're so glad to have you with us again today.
I'm happy to be here. Always love it. Always enjoy our conversations.
Great. I'm so happy about that. We have a really bad habit when that we start talking off air and we start getting into our topics and we're like, wait, stop. We have to press record. So that happened today, as always. But we did want to clear something up. I made a mistake. Steven made a mistake.
Yes.
Well, I wasn't going to call you out.
No, that's fine. I can get called out.
Okay. So in some of our, in the text of, I think maybe on YouTube or maybe some of the reels that have been posted on Facebook, and some of our reels and YouTube, whenever we've tagged Jennifer's name, we added the title BCBA to the end of her name. And she's not a BCBA. She is an ABA business leader, and she's a fantastic one, and she's got years of experience, but she is not a BCBA. So we just wanted to clear that up to make sure that we made a mistake and we apologize for that mistake. We've already apologized to Jennifer, and we apologize for any of you who that might have misled or confused. But
Yeah, that's not cool to do, and I apologize for doing that, and if you see it, if anybody sees it, like if I missed anywhere, I'd love a message just saying, hey, you haven't removed that, but I'm pretty sure I've removed it from everywhere,
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry.
You're so welcome. Jennifer caught our mistake, and
yes,
she came to us right away, and she was like, oh gosh, I don't typically watch or watch, like she says, I typically just listen to your content and don't typically watch it. And she said, and I happened to come across it the other day, and I'm just not a BCBA. And we're like, oh no. So just thank you for coming to us immediately and clearing that up. So definitely,
no,
we apologize.
Thank you. I told you, I was like, oh, I'm so stressed out about this. But I'm just glad that we're all on the same page.
Yeah. So. Excellent. So in that light, I asked Jennifer if she would come on to chat with us today about being a non-clinician owner, like a non-BCBA ABA owner. And she, like I said before, she's an ABA business leader. She's been part of our community for a while now. But before that, she's been in this line of work for many years. Jennifer, when did you start in ABA?
1997.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah, we just have a couple years difference there. My introduction was in 1995. Mm-hmm. So yep. We're what they call dinosaurs.
Yeah, we're what are should be called the trailblazers.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah, I love that even better. Yeah, let's go with that. I was just in a conversation a few minutes ago, and I was talking about where we live now is like kind of like 20 years ago, but with internet. I was referencing to 1980.
I just that.
So let me go back and say that was.
I look at 2004, and I'm like, that was
right?
4 years ago. Oh my god! Yeah.
And I do the math, and I'm like, 1980 was like 45 years ago. Anyways, time flies.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on to chat about this because it's such a real conversation, and it's a conversation that's really important to me. As you guys know already, we work with a bunch of ABA companies around the nation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And part of the people we work with are not BCBA running the company, right? They're not BCBA owned companies. And I know in our field, there's a lot of controversy on this. And, you know, Stephen, I think I can speak for Stephen, please correct me if I'm wrong, but our stance is that I don't care if you're a BCBA owned company or a non-clinician owned company, like that's not what makes or breaks a good company. There are other things that we look at to, you know, that are KPIs or quality markers or whatever of a good company. And anytime we look at extremes like black and white, and this is speaking from a girl who loves categories and loves her, loves to put things into one or the other. Mm-hmm. This is one that you cannot, right? In the sense of ABA business, BCBA owned versus non BCBA owned category. It's not one equals bad and one equals good.
Yeah. I don't know that, like we were talking about this the other day, right? If I brought up five non-owned BCBA owned ABA companies and had five clinician owned ABA companies, which one would be more ethical? I don't know that I could pick that. I don't know that I could say, this one's definitely going to be more ethical than the other. This one's definitely going to be more sustainable than the other. Because part of owning an ethical ABA company, it has to be profitable. Because if you are losing money on every case that you accept, you won't be in business very long. That means your staff aren't going to get paid. That means your clients will no longer get services. So I don't know how you could just focus on quality and not focus also on profit. That's just the way it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is where, you know what I mean? So
yeah. That being said, we also, whenever we're working with one of our clients who is not a BCBA, and they're coming to us because they say, hey, we want to start an ABA practice. There are a few questions that we ask to weed out, okay, is this someone that we want to work with or not, right? Is this in line with our values and our mission, right, or not? And, you know, one of those is, okay, do you have a BCBA on board, on staff already? And we like for them to be able to include it. And those who might be a little reluctant at first and not understanding why that's such an important part of it, very quickly into the process, they're like, oh, this is fine. We get it now. Right. And they're really on board pretty quickly.
Right.
If they don't already have one. But the other question, that's my favorite question to ask, not just in this situation, but I like to ask this question to a lot of BCBAs and a lot of ABA business leaders, is what's your why? Right. So let's start off this conversation, Jen, with, you know, what got you into the field of ABA therapy? Well, what is your why? Why did you start this company?
That is such a loaded question. If you go to our website and you look at my journey, it has nothing to do with ABA. It has something to do with something very personal that happened to me when I was a child, and where it kind of just put me through in my life, which was always advocating for kids. And I'm not going to go into the story. You can go to the website, read it. It's, I don't want to cry. But when I was 20, I was lost. I didn't know. I mean, I wanted to swim with sharks. Again, that's all on the website. Came down to Texas to establish residency. Started as a nanny, oldest of 8 kids. Yeah, sure, why not? I can babysit. I've been doing it my whole life. Was not scared of it. 3 months into it, one of their children was diagnosed with autism. You know, that was 1 in 10,000. What was ABA? Who's Lovas? What is this? Mom did all the research. That's when parents were the researchers, we were even making our own stimuli at that time. You know, you didn't have all the resources that are out today, which really, honestly, again, trailblazers. She found a consultant who was learning about ABA, starting to do more in-home therapy, applying ABA. This consultant was working under, had started working under some of the doctors in California. I don't know the whole logistics. Anyway, she had extensive experience at a center here in Dallas. And so she was starting to work with more and more parents. And I was the nanny at the time, and I was learning what they were doing, you know. About a year and a half into it, I was like, I really want to do this, because I think this is amazing, the changes that I've seen in this little guy. Also, I think that my experience with him, she also taught me that the kids are underestimated, even more so with the diagnosis. And I was like, there were things that people would assume this little boy couldn't do. And I'm like, he can do that all day long. You just need to have the expectation. And what that really taught me, and then that experience as I started working with more and more children, was these are kids. Like, put your ABA to the side, put your diagnosis to the side, and treat them like a child first. Raise that bar of expectation, encourage them, let them know you're there to help them along this journey. Do that first and use your ABA to teach, right? So, you know, back, I don't know, April, how it was for you, but back for us in the 90s, the late 90s, we were teaching these kids to, we were teaching like their life depended on it. You know, like it was, we were fighting for these kids' lives every day and the quality of life, and to be seen and to not be pushed to the side or to be in special ed or, you know, anything, and not that special ed is bad, but you know what I'm saying. Just written off, we're just going to put you in a sped class and see you later. And I've worked with hundreds of kids before I even started my company. And I've worked with kids who are now college graduates, who are the success stories. But I feel like all the kids are a success story. Anytime you can help a child, you know, overcome an obstacle or just change their quality of life for the better, that's a success. You know, I'm not here to fix anybody. There's nothing wrong with the kids. They just need extra support. So when ABA started becoming more and more commonplace, you were hearing about it more. UNT started a program. You know, now BCBAs were starting to emerge into the field, and, you know, all this reform, all these things are coming. I started now then dealing, and we've had these conversations of what we've talked about as elitist BCBAs. And they were coming in and they were telling parents that they were only going to do this and their child could only do this. And I was like, I mean, that's why I was able to stay in business by myself for so long, because I'm like, no, we're not confined to certain things. We're going to continue to teach this child until they are where they need to be. And it's not, we're not going to be dictated by things, right? And I just got tired of the way parents were being treated in general by the profession. Just like they didn't know what they were talking about, too emotional, I'm the expert, blah, blah, blah. Which I'm not saying that you shouldn't speak to your expertise, but this is a collaborative journey, right? This isn't, I'm the expert, you do what I say, you have no say. The other thing I was seeing was a lot of people coming in the field who were making it very rote. So, for example, asking a child, name something you wear, and maybe it was a receptive program, and maybe they had a hat and socks, which I don't know why somebody would put that out there, but a hat, socks, and a couch, and the child hit the hat, the BCBA was like, no, that's wrong. I'm like, you wear a hat. She goes, but the answer is socks. So there was so much rigidity in just even some of the application of what was being taught to the kids to begin with. And I'm like, you are exactly teaching this child to be exactly what ABA is being talked bad about, which is they're a robot. There's no generalization, there's no dynamic thinking, there's no, you know. I also did a lot of shadowing through my whole career in private school so that kids would be able to, like, our job was to work ourselves out of a job immediately. And so that's what we did. And so, you know, I had a really strong reputation along with all of the professionals I worked alongside with during this. And so I decided that, you know, honestly, this is so funny. If I really did, I think I've said this before, if I knew now what I knew then, what I know now, I don't know if I would have gone down this journey. But I started working where I started a shadowing program for a school. And then I decided I wanted to start my own practice because I wanted to start finding I knew there was like-minded BCBAs and like-minded people out there who really were in it for the kids. And even though we have to play a game, a word vomit game with insurance, you know, things like that, on how are we going to make sure that the kids are getting what they need. But I needed someone who was on board with these are children. We're going to treat them like children first. We're not treating them like, and I always say this, a little diagnosis or a data point, like a little lab rat. That's not what we're, now, data is important. I get it. We need objectivity. We need data. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, to sit, have a child tell a child no for saying the hat is wrong because your answer was sock, I'm not okay with that, you know. And so I started looking for like-minded individuals, and I ended up hiring my clinical director, who's now my clinical director, and he came on board with me in 2017. Well, that was around the time insurance was starting to accept ABA. They were start, you know, we still had our T codes. We were still doing that. So we were learning how to navigate through all that. But the thing that I loved about it was like, oh, yay, we're going to be able to help more people. We can help more kids now because insurance, because there were so many kids that couldn't be helped because the parents didn't have, and that was expensive.
It
It's
was.
expensive, you know, to do that for those programs, 40 hours a week, 30 hours a week, 20 hours a week, whatever it was. And I also wanted somebody that wasn't going to just slap on a 40-hour a week. You know, this is what we're doing, 40 hours a week, because this is what research says. You know, the research has not even touched the tip of the iceberg on a lot of things in some ways, because 40 hours a week for a level one child is not okay. It's just not. I don't care if they're three, I don't care if they're 10. They're level one. You need to be meeting the kids where their needs are, not what you want for your bottom line. And so that was the good thing about that. And I found him, and then we started moving from there. We started hiring RBTs, and my mindset back then was, I can teach anybody to be an RBT. That's easy. I can't teach them to want to help children. You know, and then that's just from there, it's just been a growth. Now it's more like, I still want people who want to help kids, but you really have to commit and want to be in this industry because getting hit every day is not for everybody, even though they want to help a child. And so at the end of the day, our goal and our mission and our vision is to be, I'm not looking to be the best. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not looking to be the biggest. I don't care about, you know, dominating the ABA industry. I care about quality, and I care about starting from day one, always working to work ourselves out of a job. It's not about them being, you know, on in a program with us 5 years down the road. If they're in a program with us 5 years down the road, we need to have a conversation. Like, maybe we aren't the right intervention at that point. Maybe it's time for the child to be looking at other types of, you know, help. If you have a little 2-year-old and they're level two, level one, I don't really want them in my center at 8 or 9 years old. They just shouldn't be in there because research states that early intervention and 40 hours, because insurance isn't going to push back on you with that many hours. That's not okay. That's just not okay. So that's just kind of where, and thankfully everyone that is now on my team, it is a very much what is best for the kids. And to your point, Stephen, yes, you need to be healthy, you need to be fiscally responsible. However, I think that happens with fiscally responsible mentality and knowing the game you're playing and being prepared for the delays and being prepared. You know, I see the cycle in the insurance every year. Okay, I can expect during this time, this is my famine. Not that I don't have a huge AR, but they're just holding on to the money, you know? So prepare for that when you're in your feast. And it's worked for us. I think, honestly, I think the reason the success is there is because my clinician is not worried about the business and I'm not worried about the clinical. I trust him. He trusts me. I handle everything administratively. He handles everything clinically. I trust that things are being done ethically. He can trust that I'm doing things ethically, you know, that we bill ethically, we do everything, you know? So I would almost challenge that maybe that should be more of a model, but he also has a business owner who has an extensive background and experience in ABA too. So that may be part of the difference.
It's okay, but take a minute if you need to.
Work for us too is that ability that I can run the business side, he can run the clinical side. He's, you know, we align with our goals and our mission. I mean, even how we want to, you know, bring up our BCBAs, how we want to train our RBTs, all of that is the child first, the child first, the child first. They're a child, not a diagnosis. You know, that's just kind of giving you an insight to what you need to work with. But that's the whole goal. That's what it always has been. So it's just more about getting out there and serving as many children as we can and their parents, empowering the parents. Because everybody knows as a parent, you don't get a handbook. Right. And when you have a child with special needs on top of it, and you're like, now I really don't know, you know? And I think when you're a parent too, you can understand that emotional roller coaster a little easier because we worry about our kids regardless, but what about our child who's nonverbal? You know, what about our kids who, you know, people underestimate them and they try to take advantage of them. You know, I mean, that's that's real. That's real, real emotion and real fear. So we also want to make sure our parents feel empowered and confident that their kids are getting the best service and that we're being honest with them. And being honest with the parent is not always good news. It's not always, you know, I'm sorry, like this just isn't, we may not be the right place, you know, and this is why, but that's the right thing to do, the ethical thing to do, instead of just saying, yeah, we'll do it because you want the money. I mean, that's where I am with it. So I'm sorry, my allergies, they are so bad right now.
This is like peak allergy time in Texas. Isn't there like a special flu that you guys even call it? Like something
cedar flu or I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the pollen right now, but man, it's killing me. But that's my why. I mean, it's just to still consistently grow the company, grow. I'm to the point now where it's like, I want to always help as many kids as I can, but now I want to start helping bring in the next generation of strong, good, ethical clinicians that aren't afraid to stand up and say, no, this isn't right. This is how we're going to do it because this is what's best for the kids, you know, yes. And then everybody involved. If you're taking care of the children, you're going to be okay because you're going to be taking care of everybody, you know, if you keep that focus. And that's just kind of our mentality. That's just where we've been and what we've been doing since the company was started and has been growing. It took a while to get here, don't get me wrong. Like I had to really get on to be honest with you, I had to be more forgiving and let go of the business component than I did the clinical because I did not see how the business could serve the kids the right way. I don't know if that makes sense, but I really had to learn how to be business oriented because I was so concerned about the kids and not looking, you know, sterile and cold and, you know, and that took a while for me to realize that it's not the business that's cold. It's the way that you implement it. It's the way you implement your policies. It's the way you treat your staff. It's the way you know, you can still have a strong business mind, but you can still do the right thing the whole time. So I really had to work through that because that learning the business, I was like, no, I'm not doing that. That's not. But you have to be okay with that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, that being said, like, how do you personally balance business metrics with the individualized human side of ABA therapy? Because you painted like a really great picture of that. So how do you of like the how important it is that these kids be seen as kids, as children, and not as a diagnosis and not as like a dollar sign, you know, or anything like that. So how do you balance those business metrics with still keeping it very much about the kids?
Well, I think every time I turn things, I always try to go back around to how does this get back around to making sure I'm keeping the kids at the focus. So if you're talking about, I remember Stephen talking one time about non-billables, you know, and training. So I think that that's one of the biggest things I see here in Dallas-Fort Worth when we're hiring RBTs is the lack of training. They may come in as an RBT, but they will literally tell you, I got 2 weeks of training and they threw me into a room and I feel like I was just a body. So one of the things, and my husband tells me this all the time, is we invest a lot in our training. And as you know, training is not, that's a non-billable thing. But what it's done for me is it's also increased our staff retention. It's increased the outcomes, positive outcomes of the kids, which is increasing the, you know, the metrics is it increases the child's outcome, the staff turnover is low, your BCBAs aren't as stressed out because they're not going through five different RBTs in a week. They're getting to really, you know, customize that plan. You know, we do the billing, we know, and we make sure everything just kind of flows together, but always keeping the child in mind. So I think that that's something that we've always done a very good job of is investing in training and not just during that when they start with us, but throughout the year. So twice a year, we shut the company down for 2 days and just do an intensive team building training in addition to doing multiple meetings throughout the year with the staff. And that I know is not, and I hear this from other kid or kids, 20-year-olds or kids, other individuals and professionals that are RBTs are like, we don't even know who the BCBA is.
Right.
You know, and so if you are investing in your team and you're, you know, and that's another thing we do, my BCBAs they're on the floor every day with the staff. You know, they're there to support and they're there to answer questions. And we have a very high expectation of our RBTs because we train them so well that we're like, if you want to be treated like a professional, you will act like a professional. And here's what we expect. And so, I mean, we're very quick to jump on gossip. We're very quick to jump on, you know, we've got policies in place if a staff member isn't clicking with the child, because you're not always going to click with the child.
Right.
So don't force that,
right.
You know, play to the strength of the RBT. I mean, we've come up with that multiple times where we had an RBT who was just struggling. And then we talked to her and she's like, well, I just really would rather go with this age group. She's shining. Yeah. She's thriving. And we have zero problems now. Zero problems. And she's like turned into one of our best technicians, you know, and the one of the most trustworthy. But again, I think that kind of goes to what we're willing to do. We're willing to go in and say, hey, what's going on? Like, something's not here. This doesn't seem like you. What were you missing? What are we? And we'll sit as the amount of time we spend on stuff as a leadership team is unbelievable. Like, I'm like, really? We're really having this conversation? Okay, here we are. Let's have it. But it's, I think, the outcomes of the kids speak volumes to what that is. And with the outcome of the children and the parents feeling confident, happy, you know, then you're not worried about losing clients and you're not for things that are completely preventable. I mean, I'm not saying we don't lose clients. I mean, that's the nature of the game. But I mean, do we lose hundreds of clients? No. You know, I can count on one hand. But sometimes some of that is also, you know, you just life changes, things like that. But I think because of the investment we put in our staff, which is can cost the company money. But again, that goes back into, I know this is going to happen. I need to plan for it. And that communication with my scheduling team, like, hey, this is coming down the pipeline. This is what you, no more of this, right? Like, no more non-billables. We need to preserve them for this. That's part of what helps a lot of it. And then also bringing my clinical director, because when I'm like, hey, numbers, And he's like, okay, what is it? And we'll dig into it. And we're like, oh, well, this is very fixable. We just needed somebody to oversee it. It just kind of gets away from you. Cause I mean, there's a lot to oversee and watch. So, but again, it's not coming in, oh, well, we're just going to do this. It's like, okay, we've identified it. What needs to happen? And there's small changes. And it's amazing. It's the smallest changes that make the biggest outcome.
Hey, ABA business owners, struggling to navigate the complex world of ABA practice management?
You're not alone. We've been there. And that's why we created the ABA Business Leaders Membership. It's your how-to guide for everything you need to run a successful, ethical ABA practice.
From compliance to culture, from billing to hiring, we've got you covered with in-depth videos and insider advice you'll wish you had years ago.
Absolutely. But guess what? You don't have to figure it out alone. Our ABA Business Leaders membership isn't just a guide, it's your growth accelerator featuring 34 CEUs to keep you and your team on the cutting edge.
That's right. Plus, you get exclusive access to content you can't find anywhere else. Think webinars, live Q&As, real-life success stories from practices making it happen.
And the community aspect is unbeatable. Imagine being connected to a network of ABA business owners, sharing, learning, and evolving together.
No more second-guessing your business decisions or wondering if there's a better way. With the ABA Business Leaders membership, clarity, confidence, and continuous learning are what you're signing on for.
So, if you're all in on elevating your ABA practice, join us. It's time your business not just survived, but thrived.
Head on over to 3piesquared.com and check out the ABA Business Leaders membership. Let's take your practice to the next level together.
I wonder too, well, first of all, I just have to say kudos to you for the training. Steven and I were just having a conversation about that, and that's so important, and it's a piece that too many companies are missing. So more on that on another day for sure. Maybe we'll bring you back for another conversation specifically about that. But you know, you're talking a lot about like bringing in your clinical director, and you guys were talking, right? And so I think that is another huge piece, right? And there again, like I alluded to at the beginning, where a non-clinician owned, you know, non-clinician company business owner, good, why is that so hard to get out? You know, needs to have a BCBA on their team, needs to go ahead and hire a BCBA who has experience, right? Someone who is a director level, right? Not someone straight out of school as their first BCBA within their company. Do you agree with that?
I 100%. I still remember, this is a couple of years ago now. It might be more than a couple of years ago, but there was a BCBA called me up and said, hey, I was just hired as a clinical director, and we started talking, and she had 6 months experience, right? Uh-huh. And I was like, and she recognized that she was in over her head, right? But she was like, how can you help me? And I'm like, I'm not a BCBA, right? But I can put you in contact with someone. They're probably going to tell you not to be the clinical director, right? Because like with 6 months experience, that's a huge responsibility to take on, right? Yeah. And you're just getting your feet wet. Yeah. Being a BCBA, right? This is not, you know, that's a huge level of responsibility in itself. But a clinical director, that's different. Right. It's just different. Yeah.
So, you know, that relationship, that collaboration, having, you know, for the clinic owner who's not a BCBA to have a BCBA in a leadership position within the team and a BCBA with experience. Now, in your case, not being a BCBA, but having a wealth of knowledge of children and ABA and, you know, being a trailblazer and being around before a BCBA was even a thing, right? You know, you're in a perhaps a different position maybe than another clinician, like non-clinician owner who's coming in with no experience. However, I will say a lot of our people that we work with who come in as a non-BCBA who's starting a company, most of them come in for a reason, but they maybe they are affected by, you know, they know someone with autism, or they have a family member with autism, or, you know, they've seen how ABAs change the life of someone they love or whatever. And so, but maybe they don't really have the knowledge of the ins and outs of ABA, but they have a real true passion for starting that. But I get my question here is, can you talk about how to foster that relationship? So let's say, you know, when you're starting out, right, and you've hired your first clinical director, and what kinds of things would you recommend putting in place to make sure you have that, say, decision tree, to make sure that, you know, you're the clinician's being heard by the business person, and the business person's being heard by the, you know, clinic person and the clinician, and, you know, that whole, what does that look like? What's the give and take? Who gets to make that decision, you know? Right. Who has the final say?
And the interesting thing is like, when my clinical director now, he was the first BCBA I hired. So like, he wasn't a clinical director yet. It was just me and him, right? And then he brought in a gentleman that he worked for me for a while, long time. He was a BCABA. But they had worked together in South Dakota where they were from. And so we just kind of meshed, like we just kind of clicked. And in the beginning it was, they did clinical. I did the scheduling. I did the billing. I did the talking to the parents. When we would bring a parent in to talk, the clinic, he would come in and sit down so he can answer clinical questions. Because what we were seeing was that it's not just clinical questions parents have, right? They want to understand billing. They want to understand scheduling. Well, that wasn't his lane. That was my lane. And so I would take that. So then as we started growing and we started bringing in, as we started hiring BCBAs, or some of our RBTs turned into BCBAs, we realized very quickly that, oh, all this stuff that we just inherently knew about each other from working together for so long, we had to start putting down on paper. And so one of the things I put it together a Venn diagram. And I was like, okay, I'm going to put everything that I know is in my lane, and I'm going to put everything that I know is in his lane, and then I'm going to put everything that I know we talk about together for making a decision in the middle. And when we started there, and then it was something I presented, because by that point I was starting to look at having an office manager, you know, somebody come in under me. And so that was when we really did realize that we had to make sure that there was clear separation of each department and how they also were an interdependent team. So I would encourage anybody who's bringing in a clinical director, especially if you're a non-clinician owner, to make sure that you have those lanes defined, and then where do they overlap? Because they overlap more than you think, even though they still can operate solely independently as well. So it's like, we had a big leadership meeting this week, and I was trying to kind of show how everything is very much in a circle. You know, so you have a client that maybe their hours are trending down, which is amazing. But if the BCBA isn't talking to scheduling, and the scheduler's not talking to billing, then all of a sudden this client's hours are going down, but your billing's going down. And then all of a sudden you're staff heavy because somebody wasn't talking to somebody, right? So even though clinically that's their lane, because that's their recommendation, there still needs to be brought in what we just call it clinical and admin. You need to still be bringing in the admin side, because you need to be talking about who's on the wait list. You know, you still have staff that you have to take care of, and you can't take care of your staff if you don't have clients. So it's all incredibly interdependent, even though you still do have lanes in which you're all going to operate. And I think that that's very important to make that define each of those things, and then really stress the importance of, we need to talk. We need to understand this is an interdependent relationship with everybody, your RBTs, your admin, your clinical, however you want to do it. But lanes definitely need to be defined, because without that, there's no clarity. And clinical could make a decision that maybe admin knows more about, and then admin stepping it into a lane that's not even within their scope. And you don't want to do that either, because then you're getting into ethical things about, well, this is a non-clinician making a clinical decision, and that's not okay either.
Right. Well, even as a married couple, one being clinical and one being like the operational business side of things, there was so, oh my gosh, looking back at that, You know, Stephen was just saying the other day that, you know, we wish if we had the relationship that we have now, when we, you know, 15 years ago, then things would have looked so differently, right? Because that communication piece was missing. And it's not just because of our marriage. It was because of, like, understanding, like, that give and take and understanding between, like, the clinical and the business. Because even on the clinical side, like, I would put my draw a line in the sand, as Stephen says, right? And I'd be like, nope. This is how I want to do it. I'm not budging. And you know, looking back at it now, I'm like, I could have been more flexible with that, you know. But as we're working together here, it's in a different capacity, but we do have more open communication and more clear understanding of who does what. And how we come together and have those conversations when we need to make those decisions together. And I think that's, regardless of who the owner is, you know, there has to be the team of leaders, right, that work together and have those conversations. Because it's either that or you have your solo BCBA-owned companies where they're wearing both hats, the clinical and the admin, right? Yeah. And I don't know, you know, those positions can't last for too long, right? Once you get to a certain level, like, you have to decide, am I sticking at just a few clients or am I growing and hiring more people? And then at some point you have to shift out of that role.
Yeah. So I also think that, like, it's good to have, like, I, for as many areas of weakness that we had, right, I think that having two people that could trust each other for the most part and both knew, okay, while we have wild different outcomes at the end, we're still on the same path generally, right? And so knowing that, okay, I can trust you're making a good decision for everyone involved. I think that can help a lot. Yeah. But if you're like, are you doing it for the billables or like, or are you doing it for quality service? If there is that question, I assume there's a level of trust there that you wouldn't want, right? Does that make sense? There's that, like, level of distrust. There you go. Mm-hmm. That's a good word. But there's still, even with us, there is that where you said, where they kind of cross together.
Yeah.
And how do you make that decision, right, where maybe the clinical director says, I can't do this. And the operations director says, we have to do this.
Well, look at, like, supervision rate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so if you have, like, if the BCBA is saying, okay, we need 30% supervision across the board because we want quality supervision. And so, you know, we can get into the, Did we just record a podcast yesterday about quality versus quantity, looking at supervision. But that aside, just the pure decision of, okay, well, how much supervision are we going to require? And then, like, the clinical end is saying, nope, this is how much we want. And then the business end is saying, that's not sustainable. We can't keep that up. Right. And so how can we work together to figure out, like, a system or a level system or a, you know, how do we decide what amount of supervision is involved, even training, right? Like, if you're looking at training, and especially if on the admin side, even if they're on board, they're like, yes, we want to have a robust team. We want training from the get-go, you know, but we don't have the money for that right now. You know, how do we work together to make this happen? And I think those are a lot of the pieces that
I think that everyone would agree that 15 weeks of RBT training front loaded would be great, but like, I can't pay an RBT for 40 hours for 15 weeks, right? With no billables. So there's, like, a line there. I don't know where the line is. Everybody's line is going to be a little different, but there is a line. And so when you get to those, who gets the win, right? Because, like, how do you decide? How do you and your clinical director say, okay, this is a really hot topic. How do we make a decision where there is that line of business management versus mm-hmm. clinical ethics? Does that make sense?
Yeah, because the thing is too, is that there's a business ethics too. I mean, the BCBAs, they have a responsibility for all stakeholders, right? And sometimes what they want is not going to be what's best for the company. And sometimes there's, you know, my husband always says, in a good negotiation, nobody walks out happy. And I agree with that. And so when we have something like that comes up, we will probably talk about it ad nauseum until we have both been very clear that we both understand, or that we trust that each other is completely understanding of each other's perspective. Once we've decided that, then it's like, okay, so what can we do? And what is realistic? So it's not sustainable for us to do this for the next 6 months, but can I do it for the next 45 days, 30 days? Yes, I probably can, but that means something else has to give. So that may mean that, okay, well then I'm not going to be able to focus, that we're not going to be able to do as much training here if this is what needs to be here. And then what's the plan, and how are we going to measure and make sure that what we're saying here is going to happen in 45 days. Right. And so we'll put in metrics, we need to track this, so that, because we all get busy and then all of a sudden it's 45 days and nothing's changed, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no, and then, okay, now who's going to push out that communication, and who's going to oversee to make sure? And then, and it may not even need 45 days if we're pushing it, if we're doing it the right way. Maybe we get lucky and we do it and it happens in 30 days, you know, that's obviously your goal, but the company's not always going to win. And that's okay. As long as the company is understanding that we're all still going for the same goal, the clinicians aren't always going to win. I mean, sometimes it's just a flat out, no, I'm sorry, we're not doing that. I'm not doing that. It's not something I can do. And, you know, again, as long as always at the end of the day, the child is what we're keeping at the forefront, and we're making decisions based on the best outcome for the kids. And that also helps have those harder conversations, because we're fighting for the same thing.
Yes.
We're just coming at it at different angles, and we're both, and sometimes it's like, it's almost, we don't get into screaming matches, but you feel like it is, no, this is my point. Listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yes, I hear what you're saying. And I tend to get a little more defensive. He's more level headed sometimes, but that's the great thing about the relationship, is that he and I can go back and forth. He does his job. He's supposed to defend the clinicians. I'm supposed to defend the company. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah. How do we make that work? And at the end of it, we're not always going to walk away happy, but we both know that we are doing what's right by the kids. And how do we, you know, let's get creative. And that's where you start getting some of the best brainstorming. It's like, well, let's brainstorm and let's come up with some creative ideas that mitigate some of these problems, you know? Right. And, you know, you start looking at numbers again, and you're pulling up auths, and you're going, well, we're a little bit, you know, we're going to be a little bit over this auth. We're going to be leaving some hours on the table. How did that happen? Okay, well, let's start making that up. Let's start, you know, and you start looking at more creative ways that are still on the right side. And I think some of our best ideas have come from that, you know, going, yeah. Well, why didn't we even think about this? This is actually amazing, you know? So, but you have to really, the communication has to just be there. Like, you have got to be able to be vulnerable and be able to be honest and be able to trust that at the end of this, we are fighting for the same thing, but we're both vested in it, but we're both trying to be sure that we're taking into account everybody and not just our perspective, which I think he and I do a very good job of, because we've known each other for so long and we've gone through so much stuff together. That there's so much trust there from a clinical and business perspective. Because, you know, I remind him a lot, and he reminds me, but I remind him a lot that, listen, this isn't just your license. This is my business. I mean, like, this right. is my license too, you know? So it's, and, you know, I mean, sometimes we all just get a little bit of tunnel vision, but, you know, recognize that and work through it together as a team, and then you push it out, you know? And you get everybody bought in on the why, because you're not, it's not just, this is what we're going to do. It's, hey, we've identified this. This is what we've come up with. We want to give this a shot. Do you have anything, you know, sometimes some of your best input is going to come from your staff too, because they're more in it. So.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything that we haven't covered that either one of you want to make sure that we touch on before we end today?
My personal opinion, very similar to accreditation, right? Like you, a lot of people will say, oh, if you're accredited, it's a more high quality ABA. It's too black and white for me, right? Like there's areas of gray. And so the why is so important. Why are you getting accredited? Because we want to make sure that we're doing everything correctly and providing high quality services? Or is there why, well, if we get this, we might get more clients, right? Like those are two different, very different reasons why you're doing this. So the why is just so important. I don't know that because a BCBA has an ethic that they're ethical. I don't know that that's true, right? I don't think it is. That's my experience in life, right? Just because you say I'm going to follow these things doesn't mean you always follow them, right? And you may not even know that you're not following them. So I that's where I am, is just I don't believe that you can just say that this means that. I think it's very nuanced, and it just depends on how well you got your shit together more than anything else.
I agree with that, and I think that ABA and analysts in general are too black and white. And that's why I think some BCBAs are very good at what they do, because it is very objective. It's very, but the problem is if you don't bring in that human component, humans are messy, and you can't literally account for every variable, and you can't analyze it away either. Like, what are the four functions? Okay, we know what the functions of our behavior are, but sometimes at the end of the day, the kids just don't want to do it. We don't need a 2-week chart on why they don't want to do it, right? They just don't want to do it. They're kids. Like, do you always want to do everything? So like that to me is just, I think that's another thing that's so missing in this industry in general, is going back to that why. These are kids.
Yes.
They're kids. You know, we're not going to sit here and do a plot graph or plot box or graph or whatever they, you know, all the other things they do, and sit there and decipher that, yeah, they don't like grapes. There's 500 more things you can feed a child. Do we really need to force the grapes? Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just think sometimes, and I love this science. I think it's beautiful. It's wonderful. I wouldn't be doing it. I wouldn't have an organization if I didn't. But I'm like, sometimes, guys, take a step back and bring in this human element, because these are kids. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things I talk about a lot is the developmental, like, appropriateness of things, right? Like, know what's typical for a 3-year-old or for, you know, a 3 or 4-year-old. Yeah, there's, and also just because what's good for one 3-year-old might not be good for another 3-year-old. Like, kids.
And that's okay.
Kids are their own, you know, each kid's kind of on their own growth pattern. And I remember our pediatrician when Willis was like a baby, right? And he was not on the percentile. Like he was for weight, like he was high percentile for height, but he didn't even have a percentile for weight, because he was so thin as a baby, right? He didn't have those baby rolls. Mm-hmm. He's if he ever hears this, he would not like that I'm talking about this. But anyways, point being, the pediatrician was like, you know what though? He's following his own growth path. Like he was gaining weight at his own, you know, and he was hitting all of his other markers. Like, He's just a thin baby.
He's still alive.
He's still alive. Yeah, he's probably, he's equaled out on his height and weight. He's very in the average, right? Yeah. And so, you know, that I think about that pediatrician, and I'm like, yeah, like kids have their own, growth chart. And as long as they're following, you know, as long as things, and we're already dealing with children who don't follow those typical norms anyway. So, you know, we do have to take into consideration that they're kids. And even if they're 10 years old, right? Like, they're still a kid and they're still going to do very little kid things,
yes,
whether diagnosis or not, you know? So absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what I think when I first started in the, when I first started, when I was a nanny, there was things that that they would point out and I'm like, well, he's three. I mean, is that so dissimilar than another 3 year old, you know, like, but that's where you start, when you have to start really understanding, well, he may be three, but this is why it's more concerning, you know, and having that understanding. And I don't think that that's, I think that's missed sometimes. It's just very black and white. Well, he's three, he should be doing this, or he's three, he shouldn't be doing this, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So we just need to take that more holistic approach and the human first element of things. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
All right. Do we have anything else that we want to touch on before we end today? It's not the last of this conversation.
No.
That's why I love our podcast and I love our community of you know, other individuals we get to talk to, like yourself. It's because we just get to continue all of these conversations.
Yeah. I think for anybody listening to this, whether you're a clinical owned ABA company or a non-clinical owned, you have to have that relationship of non-clinical and clinical leaders. Mm-hmm. I think it's great to have like just a BCBA owned business that doesn't have that person that can say, hey, like on the business side, say, hey, does this make sense? Should I, what do you do in this situation? I think the back and forth is healthy. I think it's good. And so having that other perspective can also help provide a healthy company, which again is so important. I think that there are a lot of ABA providers out there that signed the funder contract because that's what you do with contracts. They didn't review the rates. They didn't understand what is it concurrent billing or not concurrently billed. Can I provide supervision and protocol modification? Can I do parent training at the same time as direct service? They didn't know any of this stuff. They didn't know what kind of degree their RBT needed. They didn't know if an RBT needed to be an RBT or could they get by with a BT. They didn't know any of this. They signed the contract and now they're back and oh crap, these numbers don't work. And so like having that business minded person probably would have helped you out, right? And so I think that that's important that you have a holistic view of this. You can't provide the clinical side of things unless you make money and you're profitable. You just can't. So,
and you know what I think is interesting? Just one more thing is I got to a point where people were saying, you need somebody under you. You need somebody under you. Well, why is that any, why would that be any, why is that not the same for a BCBA who's running a clinic? At some point as a non-clinician owner, I needed someone under me to help with administrative. It didn't need to be a clinical person. It needed to be somebody with an admin background who knew, who could help me, you know, whatever. We encourage that for people who are not the clinician. Why would it be any different for a BCBA running a business? You still need an administrative person. It's helpful if they understand it, but it's not a requirement. So how is that any different?
Yeah.
So we just also recorded a podcast on burnout, right? Yeah. And it aired today. Who knows when this one's probably going to be a couple weeks out, but it aired
April 11th.
And you know, I talked about, hey, like, burnout is not a badge of honor. Like, let's stop normalizing burnout. And as you're saying this right now, you know, I made the connection of, well, hold on a minute. If we're expecting a BCBA owned and run company, how the heck are they not going to be burnt out? Because one person cannot, I'm sorry, like, tell me I'm wrong. I don't care. Like, Steve, I'm going to take it. I'm going to do what Steven says. Steven says that all the time. I'm going to say it. Tell me I'm wrong. But like, unless you're like solo BCBA, you have a couple techs and you have a few clients, the end. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But there are too many items on a list. Like, you just, it's nearly impossible to be the clinical director, mm-hmm. the CEO, the operations director, the biller, the scheduler, the trainer. Like, it's impossible. I'm just going to say it. Like, I know people say nothing's impossible, but it's pretty much impossible. I mean, you're really asking. Well,
Isn't that part of the board ethic that you should limit your scope, right? Yeah. You should limit, just work inside your scope. So
maybe that doesn't just mean working only with
maybe you shouldn't be the accountant and the biller, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know. That's kind of outside of your scope, isn't it? Right. Yeah. And again, if the company is unhealthy, then you're not going to be providing services very long, right? Yeah. And so ultimately, I think that it's good to have a mentor.
Well, right? I get asked this question a lot. How as like a BCBA owner, right? They say, how many client hours should I be working? Like what percentage of like direct services, like direct supervision, product co-modification, treatment, like how many cases can I, you know, run and be a director? And I always say, well, you need to work yourself out of that role. And if you're running a company, and you're the lead of the company, you need to be okay with no longer being the BCBA,
yeah.
Right? And I mean, I feel like that's like a strong statement, but I feel
it depends on how, again, it would be a really good idea to know your why, right? Why am I doing this? How big am I going to get? What is my exit strategy? All of those things are super important, because if like you said, if this is just a BCBA, I'm going to have a few techs, I'm going to have a couple of cases, then maybe this is fine. But if you've got like, if your goal is to have 25 BCBAs, well, then yeah, good luck with that, right?
Or like, you want to start a clinic, or you want to go multi-state or whatever. Like, you're not going to be doing BCBA services anymore. No. Like,
that was a hard realization for me. I was like, I'm going to be able to work with more kids, and I did not get to. I haven't got to work with a child since I started it, and that was hard, because that was my joy, right?
Yes.
And so I had to really learn where I wanted to focus that, to still get that same feeling of I'm connecting with the kids, I'm connecting with the parents and things like that. But at the end of the day, something has to give.
Yeah.
Something has to give if you're an owner and a BCBA, and one or the other is not going to be doing, you cannot, one or the other is going to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Not that it can't be done, but I mean,
to what expense?
Yeah, you can only work 80 hours for so long, right? And so maybe your business is running wonderful, but when's the last time you saw your kids or, mm-hmm. you know, your spouse? Or
you did something, like took a hike, or you went for coffee, whatever it is that you like to do.
Or you just had a good night's sleep, not stressing out about something.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, so when we had started our company, we'd been running it for a while, like more as like, I mean, this was before a lot of the old school way of doing BCBA doing ABA before, like, all the insurance and all the things started. Anyways, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but we have been running the company for a few years, and I was still seeing clients, and this was back before, like, I really had to be a BCBA, right? Like, and then insurance mandates came in, and the BACB, like all of that stuff started changing really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so that's when Steven, you know, quit his job, because he was helping me and having a full-time job, right?
Correct.
And then that's when it was like too much. And so he had to quit his full-time job to help like run our company, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and then not too much later, a couple weeks later, you guys all know the story, I found out like Willis was on the way. And then, you know, I think I was, I don't know, in my third trimester, and I was down on the floor working with a little kit with one of my favorite clients, actually. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Not only because I was pregnant, but because like, I couldn't do it anymore. I wasn't good for the kid. I couldn't show up in the way that I wanted to show up, being like in charge of the programming and the services of the kid. And I told Steven, and Steven's like, no, I need you to do a certain percentage. I was like, I can't. And now once things were running, even when our company was at the biggest, that's how I kept going. is I had to schedule. I said it was necessary for me to schedule check-ins with families and schedule pop-in visits with my staff because I needed that access to the kids occasionally to keep me, to remind me of my why.
Right.
So yeah. To keep me going.
Yeah. So. Totally.
So. All right. Well, I appreciate your time, Jennifer. I appreciate you being here. And as always, I feel like it was a great conversation that we never want to end, that we always feel like there's more to say. That's just how it is around here.
That's why we have 130 episodes
that's or something. Right. And right? We'll continue having more. But seriously, thank you. Thank you not only for being a part of ABA Business Leaders, and thank you for your integrity and your ethical self running your amazing business yes. that you have. We see your hard work and we're thankful for you and for owners like you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm thankful for y'all as well. So
Oh, thanks. Well, if you enjoyed listening to this podcast and you want to keep this going, right? That sounded like a threat. I didn't mean for it to sound like a
you
threat.
Better review you better it review and it. Give us a good rating. Or we're going to stop doing this. Let's pick a name. Ashley, if you're listening to this and you haven't reviewed it yet.
You're funny. All right. It's Friday evening for us. And so I think that's our cue to say goodnight.
Yes. All right. See you later, guys.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.